Hey everybody, this is the second episode of our doubleheader. We just recorded an episode about UX failures and some interesting discussion about how to negotiate certain things when you don't get to do what you are actually supposed to do as a UX designer. This is the second episode for the night. We made it a separate episode because it's not UX related, but maybe we'll, you know, find a way to tie it to UX, as we always try to do. So this episode is about the beautiful, absolutely gorgeous state of Colorado, where Doug is from. And I believe, Doug, you have lived there all your life, you said?
Yeah, well, pretty much. I was born here, I was raised here, and I spent about a year down in Texas in my mid-20s, and I spent about a year in California in my late 20s. So apart from those 2 years where I was out of state, I've been here the whole time. So it's been fun. And it's nice to be able to be an advocate for my state. Colorado is amazing. It's wonderful to be able to talk about where I'm from and share some of that knowledge with you.
Yeah, and so kind of the background why I want to talk about that, I went to Colorado about 9 or 10 years ago to visit a good friend of mine. He invited me over for snowboarding, and actually the story behind that is that back then I was already, you know, building websites for people because I don't know, it was a side gig, and he was starting his consulting company, and he just knew I built websites. And so he asked me to build the website for him. And when he said, "How much do I owe you?" It was a pretty simple website to put together, to be honest. But when he said, "How much I owe you," I think I was, you know, at that place where I felt uncomfortable, you know, asking good friends for the money, and it didn't really, you know, cost me anything, except for the time, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. Plus, I had something to add to my portfolio, so right. I said, you know, just kind of don't worry about it, it's fine. And he said, well, you know what, let me maybe sometime soon I'll invite you over to Durango and we'll go, you know, snowboarding. And so he eventually bought airline tickets for me and ski pass for those 2 days that we snowboarded. And I stayed at his house and we just had a total blast. And wow. So, yeah, and I have not snowboarded since. It's been at least 9 years and it just frustrates me so bad. And this winter I kind of wanted to go back, and maybe I still will, but just trying to kind of be careful financially and things like that, because it's just ridiculously expensive. I looked at the tickets to Durango and they start at $700.
Yeah,
it's just mind-blowing. You know, flying to Denver is like $300, to mm-hmm. Durango is $700. And
yeah,
you know, it doesn't make any sense. It's just pure extortion by the airlines, by United.
Well, it's because everybody's going there that has money.
Well, yeah, you know, that's true.
And you know, it's one of those things. You can fly to Denver and drive to Durango. It's a heck of a drive, but you can do that if you want to make the extra, $400. You're not going to spend $400 driving to Durango. No, like
right,
it.
Right. We explored that option when we thought when we were going to fly last July or August, because it was not really for saving money, but to kind of experience the mountains, drive through Colorado Springs and then kind of down there. Right. But then we just thought, you know, if we were without the kid, we would have done it in a heartbeat. But with the kid, so many hours in the car, we just said we would just fly.
Yeah.
And so to kind of go back to the background of why I wanted to do this episode, last July, like I mentioned, we went to visit this friend again, and we stayed at Durango. And so this is the first time that I saw Colorado in summer, because back then it was winter. It was still beautiful, but like in summer, you just see it in a completely different way.
Right.
And so we stayed at Durango. We went to up to Ouray, which mm-hmm. was a it just scared everything out of me. I don't know if you've been down there, but it's a really scary drive. You know, you just gotta go 2 feet off the road and you're flying down like a mile. And there are no what do you call those?
Guardrails?
Guardrails. Exactly.
Colorado, we have a thing against guardrails. I don't know what it is. It seems like the sheerer the cliff, the fewer the guardrails we have, and I have no idea why. But
I don't know. Maybe
those drives are scary.
That's what makes people more careful. I don't know. Maybe it's strategic by design.
You're probably not going to fall asleep on one of those roads,
Right,
so there
right,
is
right.
that.
Yeah, you know, yeah, maybe I'll take a nap. I'll just hit the guardrail. I should be fine, right? But if there's no guardrail, they'll try to stay awake. So yeah, and basically, long story short, we also went to Telluride. Absolutely gorgeous place, and just, you know, so many beautiful places. And the reason I wanted to kind of learn more about the state, because we are now potentially thinking it's not going to happen anytime soon, unless, you know, I become rich overnight for some reason that I will not be able to explain, apparently. We would absolutely love to move to Colorado. I mean, when we got back, we were so fascinated. We started looking, we went to Trulia and started looking at house sales. And even in Durango, it's a small town. There are really no real jobs except for, you know, hospitality or maybe a couple of small businesses and whatnot. But the houses are ridiculously expensive, like ridiculous. We would not be able to get anything decent for the maximum that we can afford. And so, you know, let alone places like, you know, Telluride or Vail or Breckenridge, whatnot, or. And so I read, you know, just a couple of short articles, like literally, you know, you Google moving to Colorado, pros and cons. And, you know, obviously, great weather, mountains, quality of life. And things like that. What can you tell, you know, me and the listeners about your experience in living in Colorado and for people who are potentially thinking of moving there and but you know not don't necessarily have the funds yet, but may in the future as they kind of grow in their careers, what can be a potential path to accomplishing that?
Well, man, that's a tough one. You know, Colorado is great, as you say, and the cost of living is getting higher. And it's changed so much since I was a kid. You know, kind of on that topic of housing costs, I remember the house I grew up in was a split level house with what there were two bedrooms up top, and there was a bedroom and a finished basement down below, and kind of a main level. And I'm not sure how many square feet it was, maybe about 2,500. And my parents sold that for less than $100,000 in the mid 90s. And when we looked, when we were moving, that house was on the market a little before we wanted to move, so we weren't quite ready for it yet, but it was over $400,000. And the house that we moved into is probably bigger than what we need at the moment, but it was, it's 3,400 square feet, including the basement. We got it at a steal for 410, I think. We've got what it's a four bedroom, two bathroom house.
And which year was that?
What year was the house built, or when did we move?
When did you buy it?
Oh, that was just that was October. So
Oh wow, that's pretty. Like, I would have bought it, man.
Yeah, we snapped it up. It was actually on the market for 430, but the people were just in a hurry to move to the Western Slope. They had some roofing problems, so we got them to knock off about $20,000 on it. But finding any, sort of house in Denver, in any relatively good neighborhood, you're not going to pay less than $300,000. So it is a high cost of entrance. But I will say that on the apartment market, if you're willing to live in an apartment, either a one bedroom or two bedroom, one of the things that was happening in Denver during the economic shortage is that they stopped building new apartment complexes. So they had people coming, But they didn't have anywhere to put them. So the price of apartments just skyrocketed. Now things are starting to catch back up, and rent is coming down, even if the actual real estate market isn't. The actual price of rent is coming down. So renting is definitely a better option, you know, for those with tighter funds in the short term. But if you have the money to invest, you know, the real estate market has gone up substantially over the years and will continue to go up. So definitely, you know, again, not speaking, I always have to make sure when I'm talking about investments and that sort of thing, that I make sure that I'm saying I'm not speaking this as a representative of my company, because I work in the fintech world. My opinion has nothing to do with them.
Well, they don't deal with real estate. So
I know, but the SEC is so picky. So I always got
to I'll talk to them. Don't worry. well, the prices that you're talking about makes me think that Denver may not actually be as expensive as Durango, because when we looked at houses over there for the square footage that you're talking about, assuming, you know, it's a decent house in a good enough location, it would be like, you know, 500 or 600 at least for the square footage that you're talking about. And because there's probably something about those and I think those prices are driven by the fact that this is either a retirement or rich people destination, because they just choose those quiet, beautiful spots that are close to, you know, it's only a 2-hour drive from Telluride. Like my friend, he says he's a consultant, he travels internationally, so he either travels or he works from home, which works out absolutely great. And he said, you know, I can do some work, for example, till 10 at home, and then hit the road, throw the gear in the car, and be in Telluride by noon, and then, you know, board there for, you know, 3-4 hours, and be back home by dinner.
Right.
And maybe, you know, proximity to Ouray, proximity to Telluride, and there's this four-corner state thing, so, you know, we just looked in Durango in particular, just because, you know, our friends are there, so if we hypothetically moved, we would, you know, not be alone.
Right.
The prices were just, we just couldn't believe the prices were, we were thinking we were looking like in, you know, Manhattan or something like that.
Yeah. It depends too on the town, you know. Durango is going to be, you know, probably a bit more expensive to actually be in Durango. But if you're looking at being, you know, just outside of it or a little bit further away, the prices go way down. You know, looking at Zillow right now, they have everything listed from, you know, what do they call it? Prefabricated, which is a nice way of saying trailer, for $60,000, a 1,500 square foot trailer, all the way up to, you know, the kind of your mid-level, is you know, a 3-bed, 2-bath for $385,000, all the way up to, you know, kind of the Ritz of Durango, is a 9-bedroom, 13-bathroom. How many people do you have living in your house where you need 13 bathrooms? But that's another story.
I would assume 13.
I would at least. So 12,000 square foot house for $3.5 million, and that's kind of what the mountain towns are. Is you're going to have those smaller places, the trailers, the smaller houses that are outside of the town that are cheap because they're kind of mountain folk area. I don't know that hillbillies is the right term, but we certainly have something sort of similar to that here.
Well, you have hills and you have billies, so
yeah, I think we qualify. Yeah, you know, there is a breed of people in Colorado that are the mountain folk that will retreat to their house and almost never come out. I don't know what they do. I don't know, you know, what jobs they perform or what functions they have, but these people seem to live in their house and never leave. Except for the, you know, the one time a month they go to town to get supplies. And they're a very interesting group. They're usually very closed off. But if you can find a way to get in with them, they're usually very nice people. So it's kind of an interesting little subgenre of people we have.
So On the northwest side and on the south side, you have Boulder and Colorado Springs. And I think Boulder pretty much starts with the kind of Rocky Mountain National Park, right? What can you so let's go back actually to Denver. So I understand Denver is a pretty major metro hub. Your company is there, the financial company, which is a national organization. And I know you are sensitive about naming that, so we're not gonna but what other because I have not explored that piece, what other major companies have either HQs or maybe secondary HQs or major operation service centers or something like that can potentially be great for employment and specifically for UX or IT or information architecture or product owner.
So the big one is Arrow Electronics, which a lot of people haven't heard of. They supply electronic components mostly.
What's the word? Arrow. Oh, okay.
Arrow. They sponsor a lot of stuff in the stadium. So if you're watching a sports game on TV, you'll probably see the Arrow Electronics logo somewhere in their slogan, which is 5 years out, which I don't really get, but whatever. But they are actually the largest employer in Colorado. And they are a tech company. They have been aggressively hiring for UX recently and tech roles in general. So they're a great one to go to. Lockheed Martin is out here as well. So if you're looking, and really we have a big space and aero defense industry out here. Lockheed Martin's big on that. We also have United Launch Alliance has some space out here as well. Boeing has some offices, as does Jeppesen, which is another aerospace company. So definitely a lot of aerospace players as well. But there are just massive amounts of big name retailers with presence here in Denver. Amazon has a small group out here.
Oh,
Trying to
they're
think.
everywhere at this point.
And if you kind of expand up even further north, more towards Boulder and Fort Collins, you've got HP, you've got IBM has a campus up in Boulder. So there's Denver is a great place for tech workers. We actually have what's called the Denver Tech Center, which is an area south of town, which is really just all tech companies, kind of like its own little mini sort of downtown area with office buildings that is all really geared towards the tech world, which means that if you want to be in the tech industry, Denver's a great spot to be for that.
Interesting. I think Comcast, not that I ever want to work for this company, but I think they have something there because when I joined Medtronic for my project, I had a girl, business analyst. She left pretty much right when I joined, and she was actually moving to Denver for like personal reasons, and she landed a contract with some employer, which I can't remember, but then she left that contract and she got a full-time position as a project manager, I think, with Comcast, which I was surprised that it was there. So I don't know. I don't know where Comcast is originally from, whether it's their HQ, but maybe it's some kind of IT or operations or whatnot, maybe call center. I don't know.
They've got a lot of operations out here. I know that they do have quite a bit in IT. They do hire designers. I've gotten contacted by recruiters for them a few different times. They also have a studio set out here where they shoot some stuff for Comcast and NBC. So if you're in that sort of market, that's available out here too. Dish Network is also out here. And Dish also does a lot of hiring in the tech space. Dish Network is consistently rated as one of the worst companies in the country to work for. So I'm not
I
sure I
was
should be
going to
too proud of
say,
that, but they are out here. So Comcast, Dish, AT&T has a small presence out here too. I'm not sure exactly how much they have in the way of tech hiring, but you certainly do see that as an option out here too.
Can you say anything like, so Boulder obviously is a is an interesting place, just, you know, 30 or 40 minutes northwest, and obviously a happening place with some of the things that you mentioned.
Right.
What about Colorado Springs, which is just 1 hour south of Denver?
Yeah, man, though, it's almost impossible to have two more different cities than Boulder and Colorado Springs. Boulder is kind of hippie town USA. It's had that reputation for a really long time, and it's well earned. I remember once when I was about 16 or so, 17 or so, we went on a whitewater rafting trip, kind of around the Boulder area, and passed by a camp of that they weren't homeless people. I don't think. I think hippies is really the best term to describe them. And they were mostly naked hippies, and that was not out of the ordinary, apparently, for that rafting trip to go by that particular camp.
You actually saw naked people on the trip?
Yeah, it was...
like including women or something?
Not ones that I wanted to see, but yeah, they were there. And whereas Colorado Springs is almost diametrically opposed to Boulder in so many ways. Colorado Springs is very much a... military city. The Air Force Academy is located in Colorado Springs. They have a big Army and Air Force base out there as well, too. So there's a lot of military folk. There's a lot of very conservative-leaning people that live there. And Colorado Springs generally goes conservative in most of our state and national elections. So it's definitely a different feel. The one thing, though, that those two cities both have in common is they both love being outside. In Boulder, you have the Flatirons, which is this really cool mountain range that looks almost like jagged dinner plates, like broken jagged dinner plates coming out right on the foothills that are so much fun to go hiking and camping around back through there. And then in Colorado Springs, you have the kind of the big attractions down there is the Garden of the Gods, which is red rock formations that are just amazingly gorgeous. And the great thing about Garden of the Gods is you can go climbing in there, you can drive back through there if you don't feel like walking through it, you can hike it, you can walk around in there with a stroller, but there's also a lot of other great outdoor opportunities around near Colorado Springs and near Boulder as well. Whether you're doing the incline, which is a set of thousands of steps, it feels like, going up the side of a mountain in Colorado Springs, or you're hiking around through the Flatirons in Boulder, that kind of unifying thing that you see between those two cities is just a love for being outside. And that's really throughout the whole state. It's very much an outdoorsy state, you know, whether it's skiing or snowboarding.
Because the weather is awesome,
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, one of the things is my wife's from San Diego, and she's always surprised at how sunny it is here. It seems like every winter she says, wow, this is a really sunny winter, isn't it? I go, no, not really. It's pretty average. It seems like it's pretty average. We get a lot of sunshine, even when it snows in Denver in particular. We get so much sunshine, it's usually gone within a couple of days. It's up in the mountains where things stick around. It's nice to have that sunshine and to have that good weather. But even when the weather's not good, when it's snowing or raining or whatever, that doesn't usually stop us. We just change our gear and get out there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the sunshine is what I'm really jealous about, and we don't get a lot of sunshine in Minnesota in the winter. My wife and I, we both love being outside and being in the sun, and she kind of gets depressed probably at the chemical level if she doesn't get sunshine for too long. I can go a little longer, but. Yeah, that's one of the reasons, among many other reasons, why, Colorado is so attractive.
Right.
Can you say anything, I don't know if you've been to places like Aspen or Vail, or maybe even Breckenridge, because I mean, I have not been there. The only time that I've been familiar with Aspen is when I watched Dumb and Number, when they went there, and I got to see kind of those cool, you know, main streets and stuff like that.
Right.
But if you have been there, if you have any knowledge, and like my friend in Durango says, you know, the crowd in Aspen is a different crowd. So like, if you want to go up there and hang out with them, that's fine. That's cool. So anything you can tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. So the resort towns, you think of these Aspen, Vail, Copper Mountain, Beaver Creek, definitely have a feel of their own. And that feel changes a lot between the time of year. You know, the ski season definitely attracts the higher end individuals, to say the least. And you know, it's one of those things where there's certainly a sense of elitism about it. It's possible to go up there, of course, not have a lot of money and bum around and still have a good time.
But are all in Davos right now, right?
Right, yeah.
With the 1,500 private jets.
right, yeah, and it's really fun to kind of go up. And if you do have the extra cash to spend up there, you can have a great time. And sometimes even if you have just a little bit of extra cash, you know, go to a good restaurant. A lot of times, so when my father-in-law, who he's a construction defect lawyer in San Diego, likes to spend New Year's in Aspen. So last couple of years, we've gone up to hang out with them on New Year's, but we don't stay in Aspen because, well, Aspen is hugely expensive, especially in the ski season, especially around New Year's. So we'll stay somewhere like Glenwood Springs, which is about an hour drive, and drive into Aspen to hang out with them and save us, you know, $300-$400 a night on hotel rooms.
Wow.
It all depends on the time of year that you're up there. You know, well, if you go in the summer, things are very different. If you go in kind of that off season, these resort towns still have a lot of those, you know, the restaurants are still there, obviously. A lot of the non-ski entertainment is there, but it becomes more of a hiking, mountain biking focused area. And certainly that income level is not the same. The towns feel a bit more genuine going in the summer. And I think maybe you experienced that a little bit going to Durango in the summer, kind of that feeling that things were maybe a little less intense, a little more relaxed and a bit more, I don't want to say friendly, but a bit more approachable, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. So between all those places that you named, you know, Aspen, Vail, Beaver Creek, and there's also Breckenridge.
Right.
If somebody wants to experience, you know, that snowy, mountainy, cute main street-y type of experience, people walking in skiing gear, having Starbucks coffee cups, you know, talking on the streets and sunshine, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Right.
That kind of like, you know, perfect experience with, you know, lodges and all those awesome interiors with, you know, fireplaces and high roofs and beams and whatnot. What would be like, you know, obviously Aspen is, you know, super luxurious and expensive, but if people are not necessarily looking for, you know, hype and fanciness and, you know, all this stuff, but really want to experience those type of things, other places that offer that at an affordable price.
Right.
And what time of the year? It doesn't have to be Christmas or New Year's.
Right. Well, so if you want to go someplace that's nicely affordable and get that very good Christmas vibe, you want to go to Georgetown. Georgetown is maybe about 40 minutes west of Denver, straight into the mountains up I-70. So that I-70 goes east-west in Colorado, goes east-west through Denver and into the mountains.
Uh-huh.
And about 40 minutes, you know, into the mountains, you get to Georgetown, which is absolutely that little main street sort of snowy, Christmassy, wonderful feeling that you're looking for. They actually have a Christmas festival there that goes on the weekends I want to say it starts just after Thanksgiving and goes through until Christmas, every weekend until Christmas. And it's just so much fun to go up to and kind of experience that. So that's one of those places I recommend. Idaho Springs is nearby as well. Idaho Springs is home to some old mines, so you can that's kind of fun. You can always go take an old mine tour there. They're also host to the famous Tommyknockers Brewery, one of our oldest and best breweries in Colorado. Tommyknockers, and definitely well worth a visit if you're up in that, and also very good with that small town feeling. And sort of the affordability. You know, you're not ever going to replace what Aspen can give in terms of that. Aspen is really, if you've ever been to Park City in Utah, the cities remind me a lot of each other. There's a lot of that same sort of upper crust sort of feel to it, and it definitely has, you know, sort of those high beam sort of places that you're talking about. But you know, for my money, I'd rather go to Georgetown or Idaho Springs in the winter. And also Glenwood Springs, if you want to drive a little bit further into the mountains, is a great choice, too. Glenwood Springs is about the same size. Well, I'd say probably a little bit bigger than Georgetown. Glenwood Springs has got a lot going on for it. It has the Stanley Hotel, which is where The Shining was filmed. If you want to go and see... They have a lot of good Shining memorabilia there, so it's kind of fun to go check that out. Very easy to get into the Rocky Mountain National Park from there. Wait a second. Am I getting myself confused here? Hold on a second. Actually, I think I might be confusing Glenwood and Estes Park. Forgive me. Oh, man, it's been too long. So Estes Park, forgive me, is where the Stanley Hotel is. And that's actually your gateway to Rocky Mountain National Park. Glenwood Springs, of course, is where the famous hot springs are. So they have a pool that is actually much bigger than an Olympic-sized swimming pool that's all fed by hot springs, which is wonderful to go see. And they got a cute little downtown area, too. Estes Park, another great sort of affordable destination that I was talking about. Another really good downtown area. That one's more geared more towards tourists because of how close it is to Rocky Mountain National Park. But going and seeing the Stanley Hotel is really awesome. They've got a really cool little downtown area. And you can, you know, kip over at the park for a pretty reasonable price if you reserve your spot ahead of time. But if you're going camping in Colorado, you've got to make sure you get in your reservations early because those spots all fill up really fast.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely... are there any those are kind of the places that I could, you know, think about. Are there any other gems that, you know, regular people like me who just, you know, operate by Denver, Boulder, Colorado Springs, Durango, Aspen, are there any other places where, like, you know, people out of state or people who have not lived there long enough don't know about?
Yeah, so Nederland is one that I always recommend, specifically for Frozen Dead Guy days.
Frozen Dead Guy.
Okay. Yeah, so Frozen Dead Guy days is held in Nederland, Colorado. Nederland, they usually have this in March, and Frozen Dead Guy days is kind of a unique and sort of quirky festival. The way that they describe it is 3 days of frosty merriment featuring 30 live bands and tents. And essentially it pays homage to them finding, well, a frozen dead guy there years ago. You can check it out. Frozendeadguydays.org is where you want to go to get more information about that. But it's a really sort of interesting festival. Nederland is kind of a closed off little town. A lot of times they don't like outsiders, but Frozen Dead Guy Days is sort of where they open up. So that's, you know, well worth a visit. The other one that I like to recommend also for their festival is Fruta, Colorado, which is out on the western slope near Grand Junction. And they have Mike the Headless Chicken Days. Have you ever heard of Mike the Headless Chicken before?
No.
Okay, so to give you some sort of background about this, most of what we have as far as history here in Colorado that's taught in schools and is kind of focused on from a Western perspective is the pioneer history, right? So there are a lot of towns that have like their pioneer days and the old West days and that sort of thing. Fruta, Colorado was looking for something to celebrate that wasn't that. And they hit upon one of their most famous residents, which is Mike the Headless Chicken. So he was this chicken that his owner was going to eat. His owner went and cut the head off of Mike and got most of the head, but left just enough of the brainstem attached that Mike was still alive. Mike could walk and would peck at the ground and try and eat. And when he didn't die, the owner realized, you know, I might have something on my hands here, and was able to feed him using an eyedropper. They eventually joined a traveling show. I can't remember if it was a circus or just some sort of vaudeville act that they were associated with, and traveled around the country for months displaying Mike the Headless Chicken. So nowadays, Fruta, Colorado has Mike the Headless Chicken Days to celebrate Mike the Headless Chicken and his legacy. And it's something kind of different from the usual pioneer celebrations that you see out west. They do a lot of fried chicken and sort of chicken-themed games and races and that sort of thing. It's a really sort of quirky festival. And if that's not your thing, they're also kind of really the heart of Colorado wine country. Colorado has a great wine industry and really alcoholic beverage industry.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Never knew.
Yeah.
I would never think.
I have several Colorado wines.
Are there any famous national brands or mostly local?
I don't know about famous national. Most of the stuff here is local, but that doesn't mean that it's not good. It's still very good. It's usually different. Get a lot of fruit wines that are different from your usual grape wines. You'll see some peach wines and blackberry wines and that sort of thing. But you do also get a lot of your grape wines, too. It's a very different sort of flavor to them, and well worth a visit. You can go out and visit the wineries and go through wine country. And then Colorado, I'd be remiss as I'm actually drinking a Colorado beer as we're doing this podcast to not mention Colorado's very extensive brewery. You know, especially in the Denver, Boulder, Colorado Springs area, there are hundreds of microbreweries, and even in the mountain towns, there are microbreweries too, very popular. You know, some with big names that you probably heard of, like Breckenridge Brewery, which is now owned by AB InBev. Started in Colorado. Blue Moon was a microbrewery originally that started at Coors Field and just made their beer for Coors Field, and that ended up going national. What I'm drinking right now is a Copper Kettle Brewing Company Mexican style chocolate stout, which is kind of a spicy Mexican chocolate stout. But just any kind of beer you could want, you can find out here and find it pretty easy. One of the places I always recommend people head when they come to Denver is to go to a place called Tipsy's, which is a Walmart-sized liquor store out on the west side of town.
What?
Yeah, it is crazy gigantic. They have 7 or 8 different coolers filled of individual beers where you can make your own six-pack, and so try a bunch of different local stuff without having to commit to anything. So, when I say it's Walmart-sized, I'm not underselling it. It is an absolutely giant building, and well worth going to see and take a look at. If that's if that's the thing that you want to, if you want to go and enjoy in Colorado, some of those alcoholic beverages.
So, well, that's good to know. kind of going back to small, cute towns between. Georgetown, that you praised so much, and Breckenridge, which one would you prefer?
Well, I have to preface this with saying, but I don't have a ton of experience with Breckenridge. Georgetown is closer and it's easier to get to. I've spent way more time in Georgetown than I have in Breckenridge. Right. The feel though is very different. Breckenridge is a resort town that's going to be closer to your feel of Aspen and Vail, where Georgetown is more the genuine mountain town sort of feel to it. Going to be closer to things like Idaho Springs and Nederland. So it really kind of depends on what you're looking for. I personally, I don't poo-poo the resort town feel of it, but I grew up not well off. I didn't go skiing until I was actually my first time downhill skiing was last year. And then my first time snowboarding was when I was 21. My family just didn't have the money for it, so I never really had a chance to get up to those resort towns until I was a bit older. So I probably personally would go with Georgetown just because I like the feel of it. There are some really great restaurants in Georgetown as well, too. It's closer. It's easier to get to. It's less expensive. So for my money, that's where I'd end up. But it just kind of depends on who you are and what you're looking for.
And so in terms of the mountains, like, you know, the higher the mountain, the better the, you know, snowboarding or skiing experience, right? In terms of the mountains, are they, you know, more or less similar, or, you know, resort towns have much higher and more beautiful mountains?
No, they're very different, depending on where you're located. The mountain feel is different. The vegetation that grows there is different. The difficulty in hiking them can be different. The difficulty in skiing them can be different. And just even from a ski resort sort of aspect of things, you have anywhere from, you know, some of the big resorts like Vail, which go up over, you know, 11,000-12,000 feet, and, you know, can have the black diamond stuff on them, and usually have very good powder, for the most part, to things like Eldora, which is just, and when I say just outside of Boulder, it feels like it's just outside of Boulder, very close, to the foothills, which is, to call it a resort would be stretching it. It's more of a local mountain. When I first started to snowboard, maybe about 15 years ago, you could get a full day worth of lessons, lift tickets, rentals, and lift pass for $70. I don't know what their package is this year, but they're always on the less expensive side of things because their mountain is smaller. You know,
and what would be an equivalent for that in Vail or Aspen?
Oh man, well even getting a lift ticket in Vail or Aspen, you're looking at, you know, $100-$200, something like that. I haven't looked at the prices this year because I'm dragging my feet on going. But yeah, you know, if you're coming into town and looking to do any sort of rental package, that sort of thing, it can get really expensive really fast. You know, even just factoring in just lift tickets, it's better if you have your own gear to be able to bring that. But sometimes even just bringing that on the airline nowadays can be, you know, really particularly bad. So if I wanted to go to Vail, let's say tomorrow, because I know we just got some snow. So let's see here, for adult, I'm just looking on their website here. One day lift ticket is $189.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so that's your adult one day. But you save $10 if you buy it online. So that's
well, there's so, that. That's yeah. So generous. That's
I
so
know. Generous. It's great.
It reminds me of, I was listening to Joe Natoli's episode today, the last episode from last year, where he interviewed Kristen, I think the lady was. And they were talking about retail and how the deals are different right now. And he said, you know, for 5%, and this is exactly, you know, 10% off of, you know, 180, like, you know, I'm not even, you know, getting out of bed for 5%. so yeah, I mean, thanks for $10 for offering it online, but yeah, I still have 170 to pay.
Yeah, I guess that's
obviously different crowd,
right? Well, and you know, too, that's one of the things about skiing and snowboarding in Colorado is that if you go to the big mountains like Vail and Aspen and that sort of thing, you're going to pay a premium just because they're in Vail or they're in Aspen. But they're usually other resorts close by that the terrain is just as good, but you lose out on some of the resorty type features of things. But those can definitely be worth it, and well worth checking out. Keystone is one of those where, you know, absolutely just amazing skiing and snowboarding, but without
the resorts. And what is Keystone? Is that a town?
Keystone is, I know it's it is actually a town, but it's really just focused on the ski resort. There's not much else there, apart from the lifts and the resort. Also, Arapahoe Basin is kind of like Keystone's brother, and is even less resorty, but still just as good skiing or snowboarding. Loveland is
Are
kind of
they around Aspen Vale area or somewhere else?
so they are kind of closer. They're between Georgetown and Vail. So Georgetown is about 40 minutes into the mountain. Vail's another hour or so, and kind of in between there is Keystone and Arapahoe Basin. And well worth taking a look at if you don't want to spend quite the same money and not have quite that same sort of resorty feel. Loveland's a lot in kind of the same area as well. Loveland is a bit older and has really nothing but the but the lifts at Loveland. They don't even have much in the way in terms of like a ski lodge just to go and buy a Gatorade or something like that. It's there, but it's not great. But if you're just going there just to ski or snowboard, for the price that you pay, you get your most bang for your buck going to those places.
Well, awesome information, and it just makes me more and more depressed because you told me a lot of stuff, why Colorado is great, and you also told me a lot of stuff confirming that it's ridiculously expensive.
Well,
So,
I'll just say this though: if you want to come here, there are ways to be here. You rent a place, share a place. So few people that are in Denver are actually from Denver anymore. Most people that I know have come here from somewhere else. My wife is from San Diego. One of my best friends is out from Maryland, and kind of in my group of friends, maybe about 15, 20 people, I'm the only native. And there are some Coloradans that will use that term, Colorado native, as kind of a way to turn their noses up at people. I don't think we should be doing that. The people that are coming here are what makes Colorado great. I remember when I was a kid, and Denver really was a cow town. The big things were the Broncos and the stock show. And the rest of the year, there wasn't much else going on. And now things have changed. We have the food, we have the culture. And it's because of the people that have come here and brought it here. And so if you want to come here, there are ways to do it, there are ways to get out here. And for anyone that's thinking about doing it, a lot of Colorado natives would shun me for saying it, but do it. It's worth it. And if you can find a way to get out here, we'd love to have you.
Well, I'll probably have to, because we explored. Obviously, Minnesota is a great state. In terms of employment, in terms of people, the whole Minnesota Nice concept is actually legit, because people here are awesome. Obviously, you have jerks absolutely everywhere, but for the most part, people are just like really, really awesome. And in terms of economy and infrastructure and things of that nature, and relatively reasonable politicians, which obviously plays a role as well. We are doing really good, but the problem is the weather. And while a lot of people are saying, but at the same time you have kind of four seasons, and it's like, if you compare it to Dallas or Florida or something like that, you don't really have four seasons. It kind of gets, chilly in the winter in Dallas and Miami, but it's really not the same. But at the same time, just like we were discussing before, having all those blistering cold days right now, like right now it's like -5. I looked at it, an hour ago, and you just cannot be outside, or even if you are that brave, I don't know what you would be doing, because it's not really doable type of weather. And then you gotta take into consideration a lack of sun, all those kind of depressing cloudy skies, lack of mountains or whatnot, because if you had mountains, maybe you could at least do something and stay warm by skiing or something like that. So it's a We looked at a lot of different places. Obviously, you kind of throw out of the mix things like New York and San Francisco, because who wants to live there, right? And but you would kind of look at, maybe Carolinas or Miami or maybe even Dallas, Austin. Austin has become ridiculously overpriced because it's so popular for many reasons.
Right.
Arizona is like way too hot and it's a desert, so nothing to do there. And obviously, most of other states, like you're not gonna go to Chicago because you're gonna get the same weather, right? So no point.
Right.
And so when we went to Colorado in last summer, we never felt about a place like we did about Colorado. We were like, let's move right now. Like, let's lose the job. I mean, I had this remote work gig, which was a really awesome gig, which had a potential of continuing a lot longer than it did. It ended in November, so I was more or less confident in the income, even if my wife gave up her job. But
Right.
again, when we looked at the house prices, we just said, we just cannot afford that. But it's still on our radar, and if we ever, well, ever kind of sounds pretty depressing, but when I would say we decide, and hopefully we do. I mean, who knows? I mean, Minnesota is a great state, and a lot of people stay here forever. But if or when we decide to move, I think we will not even be thinking twice. It will probably be Colorado, unless somehow we end up in Dallas, or because I have some good friends down there, and obviously, the winters are pretty reasonable in terms of temperature down there. So, but yeah, Colorado is definitely a jam, and we just need to figure out how to afford that, and maybe a move plan or something, and or maybe I record 1,000 more episodes on the podcast and I get rich and that does it, so who knows? Who knows?
Well, you better include me on a few of those so I can get rich with you. But
Yeah, revenue sharing for sure.
right, yeah, I got to ride somebody's coattails. That's the only way I'm going to make it.
I ain't got no problem
So, well, thanks
Well.
for having me on. It's great to be a part of it. And if you or anybody else have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. On Twitter at Doug Collins UX, or visit my website denveruxer.com. Shoot me an email. You can find my contact information there. I'm more than happy to answer any questions and talk about where I live, and hopefully we'll get a few of you out here, and hopefully we'll get you out here at some point in time.
Well, yeah, and I was going to finish with the sentence that I'll probably get to Denver for sure. I mean, for w whatever reason, I mean, just to meet you and do some cool stuff as well. Maybe explore and go to Georgetown or
Yeah.
whatnot. So,
Well, we'll record a podcast in person there, and I can maybe we'll
there you
maybe I'll
go.
I'll take you to Tipsy's and we can record your reaction going into that or something. But
Awesome, awesome.
yeah.
Well, thank you so much, sir, and thank you guys for listening. Again, it's not a UX related episode, but I just wanted to talk to Doug about the beautiful state of Colorado, and I thought it would be a good idea to record that because that can be pretty interesting information for some other people as well. So, thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.